Any examples used are for illustrative purposes only and do not take into account your particular investment objectives, financial situation, or needs, and may not be suitable for all investors. It is not intended to predict the performance of any specific investment and is not a solicitation or recommendation of any investment strategy.
Welcome to All Things Financial, the show that helps upgrade your financial literacy. Trey Peterson and Yelisey Kutz are retirement planning specialists here to provide a unique and conservative approach to managing your money. Now, here are your hosts, Trey Peterson and Yelisey Kutz.
This is Yelisey Kutz, and today I'm joined with by Ryan Moffitt. Ryan, the people have spoken. They've been practically begging us to have you back on since your first appearance. How does it feel to be in such high demand?
I feel like I should be giving like some type of Super Bowl answer here. You know, Yelisey, it feels really good. Really good. I think we might plan a trip to Disney after this to be coming back to the podcast. No, happy to be back and happy to have good conversation about important topics, tax-related, investment-related, et cetera.
Yeah, well, we want to shout out some of our listeners. We do complimentary consultations all the time, and we hear from listeners all over the country. And I'm told we have at least one listener in New York. So I just wanted to do a little shout out to my mother. Thank you for listening and keeping this podcast going.
Thank you, Mrs. Kutz.
Yeah. But anyways, we have an agenda as we always do. And I know we don't always complete every item on the agenda. So I'm not going to say that this is what we're going to go over. But I will mention some of the topics we'd like to discuss, and many of them we will not discuss. So I don't want to get your hopes up. but one of the first things that we're going to talk about, obviously, is tax season. So we'll talk about important tax reminders, what you need to do before April 15th, obviously the filing deadline, some retirement tax strategies, because that's what we do. We talk about retirement planning. We'll mention some retirement regrets, what most American seniors are loving and potentially regretting about retirement. And why don't we kick things off with a little bit of financial wisdom. Ryan, if you want to do the honors, if you want to do the quote of the week.
And now for some financial wisdom. It's time for the quote of the week.
Quote of the week from Will Rogers. And I will say, if you don't know who Will Rogers is, he was a prominent early 1900s actor and voiceover, did a lot of speaking, and known for some humor, etc. But he was quoted saying that the only difference between death and taxes is that death doesn't get worse every time Congress meets. So thank you, Will Rogers, for the wisdom and insights on comparing taxes to death.
Well, that's obviously, unfortunately, true. actually, they've been quite generous with estate taxes. So, definitely some wisdom there. But as far as some important tax reminders for retirees, the biggest one is we want to mention this. We can't stress this enough. File by April 15th. We'll talk about some exceptions to that a little bit later on. But, file by April 15th. That is what I would say the secret of wisdom when it comes to tax season. And unfortunately for many of us, in order to use wisdom, sometimes we need experience. And experience sometimes is gained when we don't use good judgment. And that's why experience is the best teacher. So one of the things that I want to encourage you, rather than benefit from the experience that maybe you have or do not have, we have seasoned CPAs here in-house, here at All Things Financial, who'd be happy to help guide you and give you some of the advice and wisdom you may need.
Yeah, I think actually, Yelisey, what's interesting is that the first podcast I was on, I think that was even our quote of the day, was learning from other people's mistakes, not just your own. So you're right on there. Is sometimes those lessons are hard, but definitely dive in with a professional. And like Yelisey said, we've got a team of CPAs here, whether it relates to just getting your taxes completed or whether it's tax strategy for your retirement plans.
Yeah, and I know you work closely with Matt and Jim, and you guys like to banter and have a lot of dialogue around tax planning.
Yeah.
What would you say is like the number one thing, let's just say step one in making sure that you have a successful and efficient tax season this year?
Yeah, truly, I think everything that I've heard from our team and then even some others is that it really does start with the basics. And aside from tax season, you have to have some type of organizational system. I think the biggest, we'll call it a complaint. The biggest pet peeve or complaint that your tax preparer or your CPA, your accountant has, is that when you come in and you're expecting some type of result, whether it's an additional deduction or some type of, hey, we want to double check this or make sure that happens, and then you don't have the documentation prepared for it. And I think the biggest thing and the easiest thing that you can do is actually in preparation of April 15th is more of a continual annual all year long type activity. And that really is just be organized when it comes to your documents, your bank documents, your account documents, expenditures, all those types of things. Have some type of system, whether you are more of a paper person and you keep everything in a file, or whether you are a scanning it at home, or whether you've got a scanner app on your phone and you save it that way. There are a lot of great apps out there if you're a phone person for either scanner or receipt tracking, et cetera. And I think generally speaking, when CPAs are going to do your preparation and going to do your strategy, they have questions. Oftentimes, they would even say are fairly straightforward and not complicated questions, but are hard to answer because not prepared in the documentation, not having that organizational system.
Right. Yeah, and obviously making sure your W-2s, your 1099s, all of your Social Security statements, any income-related documents that you might have. There's nothing that your CPA probably loves to hear more than after he's prepared, he or she have prepared your taxes, for you to give him a call and let him know, hey, I think I missed a 1099. You know, that is not a conversation any CPA obviously looks forward to. So we want to make sure we have everything in place, gather your documents, have everything ready and organized to the best of your abilities. There's a lot of things too that, you know, when it comes to this process, one of the complaints that I've heard from clients sometimes is, hey, you know, I heard that medical expenses are deductible. I heard that my charitable contributions are deductible. And when it comes to itemized deductions like that, deductions that you would claim on Schedule A, that you would list on Schedule A, those deductions, in order for you to use those, they have to exceed the standard deduction. So the standard deduction, whatever you end up having in terms of those itemized deductions, they have to exceed that, because you're going to take the greater of the two. You'll have your gross income and then you'll reduce it by either your itemized deduction or standard deduction. And, you know, one of the things I often have a conversation on is the charitable contributions, because we're working with people that are in and nearing retirement, and some of the opportunities are actually begin to become more available the older you get. For instance, QCDs, qualified charitable contributions. So with a QCD, basically the age for that starts at 70 and a half, which coincides with the old RMD age of 70 and a half. Obviously, the RMD age has changed to 72 and then 73 most recently, and going to age 75. But the QCD age, that's still 70 and a half. And what that allows somebody to do is it allows you to give money directly from your IRA, your qualified accounts, your pre-tax accounts, and you can send that money directly to the charity, and you can exclude that from your taxable income. So a lot of times when we're helping folks who give charitably anyways, and they're wondering, hey, like, is this contribution, this charitable contribution, is it actually helping me in terms of how much I have to pay in taxes? And the answer a lot of times is no, because it's an itemized deduction and you don't have enough itemized deductions to be able to take advantage of that. So you'll be taking the standard deduction. Obviously, the charity still gets the contribution, and, you know, most of us aren't giving to charity to get a favorable tax deduction, but it is a nice benefit. However, once you get to the age of 70 and a half, that's where those QCDs could potentially kick in, and you can actually lower your IRA balance, lowering your future RMD exposure, and also give to the charity while excluding what otherwise would be taxable income. So that's a huge one. And same thing with medical deductions. I don't want to spend a whole lot of time here, but Ryan, if I were to ask you, you know, we work with retirees all the time, every day, all day. We're meeting with retirees. A lot of times we're meeting new families and we're getting to know new people. And obviously we're meeting a lot of our existing clients as well and talking right to them. But retirees are really, really busy. If you had to pick, like, what are the two things that retirees are busy doing? One or two things that they're mostly occupied with in retirement. What would you say?
Yeah, mostly occupied with people are traveling a lot more, which I think is a wonderful thing. But people are definitely spending time traveling more. And then I think a secondary component is, it sounds kind of opposite almost, but I think people are also trying to fill their time as well. You know, they're enjoying it. They enjoy the retirement. They enjoy the extra time with family, friends, et cetera. And they're looking to say, okay, we've got the travel. We've got additional, you know, things that we're doing now that we've got the additional time. But I think, you know, a big part of it is saying like, hey, what's our next step? You know, what do we need to plan for in the next 2 years, 5 years, 10 years?
Well, you didn't say the things I was hoping you'd say, or kind of ruining my segue into the next topic. Retirees are busy. Retirees are busy doing two things: doctor's appointments and grandparenting.
That's true. That's also
true. Unfortunately, only one of those is potentially deductible. So speaking of the medical expenses, the medical deductions, when it comes to your medical deductions, and we've even had clients that if they have some procedures that they've been putting off, they put those off into a specific year because they want to have as many procedures or as many, I guess, medical expenses as they can in a calendar year. And the reason for that is, in order for you to be able to make a medical expense deduction, those deductions, they have to exceed 7.5% of your adjusted gross income. That's the only way you can count them towards your itemized deductions. So there is a lot of confusion on what qualifies as a medical deduction. And obviously some of the more obvious ones are, you know, the fees that your doctor or medical practitioner charges. But on the not so obvious side, you know, you can deduct things like acupuncture. I don't know if that helps anybody, but I'm not joking. Acupuncture is included. And Ryan, I know you've been on a little bit of a health kick recently, trying to lose weight and all that. So, you know, I don't really want to make light of this, but you can actually deduct the amount you pay to participate in a weight loss program, for instance, if it's related to a specific disease, which includes obesity. I'm not pointing any fingers or saying anything. I'm just leaving that out there for anyone who may benefit from that.
Well, the big question for me on that, what I was trying to figure out is, okay, so, you know, if we're considering a weight loss program, obesity, et cetera, and anybody that's looked into it, anybody that's done anything health related knows that those charts are hard to line up with, right? Like, it's not hard to be obese.
Well, but it's definitely not hard to be obese. It's hard to not be obese, Ryan. I think that's...
Very sure. Very, very correct. But so, you know, looking into this and you say, okay, typically it's what is the diagnosable condition? And the challenging thing for me personally that I found out is that my wife saying that I need to lose weight is not a diagnosable condition to be able to deduct medical expenses. But we're going to figure something out there.
Well, what I always thought was funny, you know, they often use the BMI, the body mass index, to determine, you know, where you are in the scale of healthy to somewhere between healthy and morbidly obese. And I was just always surprised how little it takes to qualify to be obese. And I feel like I've spent most of my life there, even when I've been like very physically active and healthy. So it doesn't really take much to qualify. And the benefit is that you can even like deduct certain costs related to nutrition and wellness and general health. So anyways, the point is, I'm not trying to make light of this. Obviously, there's a lot of expenses that are related to healthcare and medical expenses. And a lot of times people don't take advantage of that because, you know, maybe it's hard to get over 7.5% of your adjusted gross income, or maybe you've just been so used to taking the standard deduction. A lot of times people find that, hey, like you actually have enough itemized deductions, but you've been taking the standard deduction for so long that you're really not doing your due diligence, not making sure that you're taking advantage of everything, discussing things with your CPA to see, hey, do I qualify to take the itemized deductions this year, or am I stuck with the standard deduction?
So, yeah, I think that's actually feedback that we've gotten from our CPA team as well is, you know, in conversation, a lot of times these things will come up, right? And a good accountant will say, hey, that's actually tax deductible because of this qualification. But because you're so used to, well, I just always do the standard deduction. And many people we find just don't know what is deductible, what can I deduct from my income, and how does it all work, that they kind of push the easy button, so to speak, and just go with the standard deduction. And Yelse mentioned earlier that it's an either or thing, right? You either take the standard deduction, or if your deductible expenses are greater, you take the greater of the two. And really the thing that we hear from Jim and Matt and our team on the tax side is that oftentimes these conversations come up, but people aren't necessarily prepared to say, oh, that's right, that is a deductible item, but then I don't have any documentation on it other than knowing that I simply did it, right? So I think that's one of the things that's worth diving into and talking to a professional to say, hey, here are the things that I've got going on in life right now. Even if it is something where you say, well, I had to, you know, talk about some medical diagnosis or whatever the case is, because now I am on some type of program, whether it's weight loss or otherwise, right? Again, I mean, you know, my wife diagnosing me as overweight doesn't necessarily count, but but the workouts have been great. I do have to say that, LSA, they have been great.
Yeah. What do you do for workouts?
So I joined a kickboxing gym, which probably sounds cooler than it actually is. But I've been doing 6 a.m. 6 days a week for about 3 months now. Yeah. So this morning I worked out so hard that I thought I was going to possibly pass away.
Well, there you go. Come here for your retirement planning and also your health and physical fitness planning. And that way you could be like Ryan.
Great book and great backgrounds.
Okay. Well, so speaking of, you know, taking the standard deduction, we probably should mention what that is. We're referring to 2023. So if you're single, that's $13,850. In order to itemize, you would have to have more in itemized deductions. And if you're married, that's $27,700 for those married filing jointly. And, you know, sometimes the question we get is, well, you know, I'm married. Should I file separately? What are some of the benefits to filing jointly? Can I save some money? And, you know, I think in the past there's a lot more talk about like the marriage penalty or some of the marriage benefits. And I think that, you know, there's a lot of that that's been remedied by the existing tax code that we have today. Like if you look at the tax brackets and you line them up side by side, like someone who's single and someone who's married, like those numbers are for the most part just going to double as you go down to each rate. And that really, the only time that changes is at the very highest tax brackets. So if you go all the way down to like the 37% tax bracket, our highest ordinary income tax bracket, that's where you can see if you're single, you actually are in the 37% bracket if you have more than $578,000. But if you're married, it doesn't double like it does in the previous tax brackets. If you're married, that number is $693,000. So of course, if you're making more than that, if you're in that category, you could say, hey, that is a marriage penalty. If your income exceeds $693,000, it seems like there would be a benefit. Whereas if you're single, each of you could potentially have $578,000 and still be in that 37% or prior to the 37% bracket. So, you know, there are some differences like that, but really, I would encourage you to sit down with your CPA, find out what makes the most sense for you. You know, there's actually a study that I looked at by the Congressional Budget Office, and you know, outside of what the name says, they do a lot of budgetary estimates and things that I've referenced in previous podcasts in terms of our spending as a nation and what we can anticipate. But they've also done a few studies on like the tax system that we have, and they mentioned some of the objectives that's relevant to the taxation of families. And there's really three items that this one study that the CBO did that I thought was really interesting, that the three objectives of our federal income tax system. The first one is equal treatment of married couples, which basically means that like the household with the same income pays the same amount of taxes regardless of who earns the income in the household. So we know that when we're married filing jointly. Of course, maintaining a progressive taxation. So people who have higher incomes, they eventually enter a higher marginal tax rate. And actually, you know, I had a teacher back in high school, and his name was Mr. Heller. And I doubt he's listening to the podcast, but his name is actually Mr. Heller, so I probably should have changed that up. But he used to always complain about getting overtime. Hey, you know, they're giving me overtime, and it's pushing me into a higher tax bracket. And I always kind of thought that was funny because, you know, as many of you know, we have a progressive tax code. Depending on how much income you have, that determines what rate you're in. But it doesn't mean that just by having an additional amount of income that now all of your income is taxed at a higher rate. That's not the case. all of us are in the 10% tax bracket. We then have income that spills over into the 12% tax bracket. And then if we have even more income, then only that income spills over into the 22% tax bracket. And surprisingly, there was a study I read a couple of years ago. And once again, I don't have the source for you, but I'm sure it'd be pretty easy to find. But there was a study that basically they surveyed average Americans and they asked them, if your employer were to give you a $1 raise, pushing you into the next tax bracket, would the impact be significant or minimal? And I just thought, you know, obviously it's minimal. It's minimal because only that one additional dollar gets taxed at the higher rate. But surprisingly, the results from the survey were 50-50. Half the people thought it was minimal, half thought it was significant. And obviously, Mr. Heller would fall into that significant category. Because a lot of times people think if I get pushed into a higher tax bracket, that means that now all of my income will be taxed at 12 or 22%. And that's just not the case. The only exception to that is when you're in retirement. In retirement now, you do have to consider a few additional things. You do have to look at the fact that, hey, one additional dollar doesn't just mean that I now have one extra dollar taxed at 22%. It could potentially mean that now more of my Social Security is taxable. It could mean that, hey, I now have more income, more my adjusted gross income is such that I have to pay more for my Medicare Part B premiums, or maybe certain tax credits are being phased out. So even though when it comes to your ordinary income taxes, you know, we have progressive taxation here. Even though when it comes to that, maybe it's not as significant, but there could be other ramifications based on the additional income that you've introduced. So, of course, the progressive taxation, that's something that our federal income tax system, that's one of the objectives. And the final one is marriage neutrality, meaning that a couple's marital status should have no influence on their tax liability. So these three things seem pretty standard, pretty normal, something that, of course, like, yeah, obviously that is the objective of our federal tax system. One of the things that I thought was interesting, though, is the study also describes that satisfying all three objectives is the unattainable ideal. And it goes on further to explain that our current tax system can only meet two of those, but not all three objectives. So I found that very interesting. And obviously, the most obvious example is in our tax code as we get to those higher tax brackets that I mentioned, where it doesn't quite double once you go from the 35 to the 37% bracket. So, Ryan, what are your thoughts?
Well, I think, you know, for your teacher's sake, and you know, correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think there's some easy solutions too. And this is for a lot of people where they end up with a little bit extra income. They got the increase at work, whether it's their annual increase or they got a promotion or whatever the case is. And now they're into a little bit higher income, right? And maybe it's something that pushes them up into the next tax bracket. Maybe they were already on the cusp. But I think some of the easy ways to also help thwart that is also just looking and saying, when I'm doing my planning and when I'm doing my retirement planning, if I got that increase, if I'm getting that overtime, am I also changing my contributions to how much I'm saving in my 401k, my IRAs, my Roth, whatever it may be? Am I changing those contributions at the same time? The limits go up each year, and for 2023, the 401k limit was 22.5. They just upped it to 23,000 for this year. And then on the IRAs, with the catch up and everything, it's $7,500. You can save over $30,000 pre-tax in any given year between a couple of different routes, right? So you get that little bit of overtime, or you got your 2%, your 3%. Wage increase. If you're worried about, gosh, I was already on the cusp of the tax bracket, perhaps you need to look at some contributions to bring some of that taxable income down a little bit.
Yeah. And it's worth noting too, if you're an active participant in an employer-sponsored plan, like a 401k or 403b, or your spouse's, that could affect your IRA contribution deductibility. So in other words, if you're actively participating in a 401k, your contributions to the IRA may not be deductible, and also a good reason to consider instead contributing to your Roth IRA. Like if you can't deduct the IRA contribution, why do it? Instead, put it in the Roth IRA is what I'm getting at.
Right. And if it's not deductible, and you might say, well, Roth isn't going to help me this year, but Roth absolutely will help you in the future, yeah. Right? The two tax-free forms of income that you can have down the road are either Roth or life insurance, right? Either one of those things are great avenues if you have additional income. If it's not tax deductible, it may not be an impact this year, but definitely down the road, it'll help you out for sure. So
yeah, for sure. Well, you know, just a few other things to note here. Obviously, outside of maximizing your IRA contributions, the one thing that it doesn't present a problem, but the one thing that most of us are aware of, especially as we get closer to the age of 73, is for all of this time, you've been diligent, you've been consistent, you've been putting money away into your 401ks, your IRAs, and your tax-deferred accounts, the pre-tax accounts. And eventually, you have to start pulling money out, right? Your required minimum distribution. Now, you know, most of us, like, you know, if you were to do a show of hands and say, hey, you know, who's excited about taking their RMDs? No one is. Because if, you know, best case scenario, you'd like to be able to take distributions from those accounts at your discretion. If you need the money, pull it out, take it out. Unfortunately, that's not exactly the way it works. You can take the money out if you want to at any time, but there's also a required minimum distribution. Now, it's important because, you know, sometimes we have accounts in multiple places. And a lot of times, you know, you talk to folks and they don't realize that, hey, like if you have money in an old 401k, in an IRA, and maybe some other tax deferred account, that's different. In that scenario, you would have to take three RMDs. However, if you have multiple IRAs, or if you were to roll everything from the employer-sponsored plan to an IRA, then you could satisfy the RMD from one account. So the difference is, even though they function in a very similar way, if you have different tax classifications, you would have to take an RMD from each account versus if you had multiple IRAs, same tax classification, you could simply satisfy it from one account. And the reason for that, why that's important, is because, you know, depending on the types of investments you have, it might not be convenient to satisfy your RMD from each account. So, but the biggest thing is making sure you take the RMD. There's a stiff penalty for failure to take your RMD. It used to be 50%. So like, imagine if your RMD was 20 grand and you didn't take it, you would have to pay 50%, $10,000 in a penalty for failing to take your R&D. So the Secure Act 2.0, they reduced the penalty down to 25%. So still, obviously, very stiff, not something anyone.
Very generous of them to reduce it.
Very generous. 25%. What a relief. but if you amend your return and actually fix it, take it, you know, subsequently in the subsequent year, and you actually make an amendment, they can reduce the penalty down to 10%. So nothing anyone wants to deal with. So we encourage you, take your RMD. Whether or not you need it, that is the advice here on the RMDs. And of course, what with your tax professional.
Yeah.
Do a lot of planning ahead of time. It's not, you know, planning for your RMD, incorporating your RMD, making sure that it's coordinated with all the other income sources that you have, so there aren't any surprises and tax penalties, if you will, that you have to deal with later on.
Yeah, if RMDs, QCDs, age 70 a half, age 73, there's a lot of stats and abbreviations and numbers out there. And for a lot of people, and this is any industry, by the way, right? This is, if you're a CPA, you know this stuff like the back of your hand. If you're in the financial industry, like we are, obviously we know this stuff well. But there's a lot of things that you know, we don't know in other industries. So if you're the person out there listening to this saying, gosh, this is making my head spin, I promise you there may be something that you do for a living that maybe makes our head spin, just to kind of equalize the conversation here. But what I will say is that this is also the value in finding a professional, the value in finding somebody that does know what they're talking about, right? There's always that balancing act between, hey, is this something that I tackle on my own? Or is it worth my time, or is it worth my money just to find somebody that knows what they're doing? And statistic after statistic will certainly show that when you find the right person that knows what they're doing, in the long run, it actually saves you more money and puts you in a better financial position. Whether that's investing, whether that's taxes, whether that's planning for your RMDs, et cetera. And I would also say, don't wait until you're 70 years old or 73 years old to start planning for these things. There are things that you could be doing today to start planning for these. There are things that you could start doing by saying, hey, am I a charitable giver? Yes or no? How much do I give annually? Gosh, I don't know. I've never tracked it. Maybe it's worth figuring it out. Going through some basic calculations, and we do this for clients all the time, is we say, hey, you know, your RMD is coming up. Should we be doing some planning for that? Yes or no? We try and identify, is this a need that you will have? And can we help mitigate some of that and make it easier to process, whether that's in 2 years from now or 5 years or even 10 years from now? There are things that can be done today. So we encourage you to certainly talk to your CPA. If you don't have one, if you don't have a financial planner, or if you just haven't heard from them in a long time, we'd be certainly happy to help go through an analysis and give you that complimentary consultation and look at these things with you, because it is important to map them out and plan and know what you're getting into before you're actually there.
That's really good advice. One thing that I just remembered that is definitely worth mentioning, and we get this question all the time, the IRA contribution deadline, like if you are going to contribute to your IRA or your Roth IRA, it's actually not the end of the calendar year.
Right.
People often think it's December 31st. Oh, I missed it for 2023. I can't go back and do anything. I can't change how much I owe in taxes at this point. That's actually not true. You can contribute to an IRA until April 15th, the tax filing deadline. It's not the end of the calendar year, but the tax filing deadline. And you can deduct those contributions from your 2023 taxes if you're able to do so on the traditional IRA. So I thought that was worth mentioning. Obviously, we're going to move on from this topic to talk about a few other things, but that's a big one that we get this time of year almost daily.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad you brought that back up, Yelisei. It's a great point.
Okay. Well, so there's a study done by Think Advisor, and really what they're trying to do is they were surveying retirees to see how American seniors and retirees are feeling, and they wanted to know, what are they regretting? What are they happy about? So I just want to start with the first one. So according to Think Advisor, the largest regret of retirees today is financial. 78% of retirees are saying that that they're sorry they didn't save enough money or prioritize their finances early enough. That's interesting. 78%. And I think that a lot of the numbers that we see from some of the studies that we've cited from Fidelity that show the average savings rate and how much people are actually putting away, and depending on the age category, how much they have saved for retirement, I think that that really just coordinates well with this number, because in many cases, it does seem pretty inadequate.
Yeah, for sure. If you get 78% of the population saying that, wow, I should have prioritized things differently. And this is, I think there's a, you know, everybody's story is a little bit different in the sense that, you know, whether it's moved around a lot, or whether it's, you know, an industry that changed dramatically, that changed their income, whether they had a ton of kids. I've got four kids and they are not cheap. Anybody that's got kids knows that. Sometimes it can be hard to save when you've got, well, our kids are 14 down to six. So we've got some that are in sports and some that are still just doing a little bit of everything, trying to keep themselves entertained, right? So it's easy to see how it happens, and it's easy to see how people can get there. But the priority that should be placed on saying, what do I need to do? What do I need to accomplish today? Now, whether you're 40 like I am, or whether you're 50, or whether you're even 60. Hey, what do I need to do today to really secure my financial peace, my financial freedom in retirement?
Yeah, I you know, sometimes I forget, Ryan, that you're 40, and I forget how much all of this advice applies to you. I'm joking. So anyways, the second regret, 52% of retirees, they actually regret not having prioritized their health earlier in life. So, you know, they're making health a top priority. 82% are making it a top priority now in retirement. And I would encourage you, talk to Ryan if you need help with this. I doubt many of you are interested in going and taking it to the extremes that he has, waking up at 6 a.m. in the morning to do some kickboxing. But I'm sure Ryan would be happy to have you join. Tag along.
I don't know about the rest of the country, but I know here where we're located at, pickleball has become a huge thing.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
Tons of our clients, oh, hey, what's new? What's going on? Oh, we got pickleball this weekend. Where, you know,
seems like everybody.
Everybody. They're opening up pickleball courts, it seems like, everywhere currently. I know tons of people that are doing this.
You know, one thing that's not often discussed is the pickleball-related injuries. it seems like it's a pretty safe sport. But, you know, a lot of times, you know, the injuries are folks that are playing like they did back in their 20s, but they're in their 70s. So I just want to caution people, you know, pickleball can be a dangerous and a hazard in retirement.
So I got a little bit of insight from a couple of our clients talking about pickleball, and a couple of them are fairly serious about it. And they both have said that, well, we play enough that we've kind of got the idea of who shows up to the court, right? So you kind of get an idea pretty early on, like, hey, is this going to be a real competitive game, a good activity, a good, you know, workout, et cetera, get my heart rate up? Or is this going to be more just like for laughs and for fun and we're all having a good time? But there are a couple of our clients that are actually quite serious about it.
Yeah, I think that'll probably be me when I retire. I struggle to just play just for fun when it comes to anything, including board games with my children, which we've all found out the hard way that dad doesn't like losing.
Yelisei has flipped many a board game when he's down.
All right, moving on to the third disappointment. 21% of retirees are disappointed that they didn't travel more before retirement. Everybody thinks about traveling in retirement. You have your bucket list items, all the things that you eventually want to do. We've had a number of people that have purchased RVs and really just made a road trip, like a two-year-long road trip, or traveled the world, and they finally start planning to do all these things. Surprisingly, many are disappointed that they didn't do it earlier.
You know, it is funny. We talk to people, whether it's, topical advice or, you know, existing. And often I'm surprised how often I hear like the camper van come up. And I'm not talking like giant RV, luxurious king size bed. This is more like, you know, like an old van with a bed in the back. I just want to travel across the country. And I'm kind of like, man, I don't want to do that at my age. No. You know, today I want the big luxurious RV, or even better yet, a hotel. But I guess there's that adventurous spirit with a lot of people, and just the kind of the idea of the adventure and the exploring and be able to just kind of go without a plan is something that a lot of people look forward to.
Yeah. And I think that a lot of it too, like while you're working, you know, it just seems like just the stress and the demands that are placed on you while you have children or while you're in the middle of your career, it almost doesn't, you know, like, I don't see something like that as something I have any interest in, because I can't imagine being able to relax, especially like taking a long road trip. Like for me, the travel part is the part I want to minimize. Like I want to minimize the actual travel. I want to get to my destination and enjoy where I'm going. But in retirement, obviously you don't have that. So you could just, you know, relax for once and take your time and take however long it takes to, yeah, enjoy the journey a little bit. So, Well, let's move on to things that that aren't regrets, but things that retirees are actually loving about retirement. Surprisingly, considering the numbers we just mentioned on some of the things that they have regrets over, 90% of retirees actually say they enjoy being retired. You know, that's an interesting stat, because, you know, while 90% may say they enjoy being retired, they're actually, you know, you have to make sure that you find something meaningful to do in retirement, because you know, there's actually many other stats that support that about like a huge number of people. I don't have the exact stat, but I think I mentioned it in a previous podcast. They experience adverse health effects, like things like heart attacks and strokes, compared to people who keep working. Like the numbers are actually staggering, that like in those first couple of years of retirement. And I think that a big part of that is a lot of times people retire without a plan. And I think that, you know, although it might sound like really appealing to finally not have to wake up at 7 a.m. like you did for the last 20 years, to finally not have the commitment that you have and the requirements, like I mentioned, the demands that maybe your job has been placing on you for all these years, while that might sound appealing to have absolutely nobody telling you what to do, I think that really just kind of, that's more of like the honeymoon phase of retirement. You have to find something meaningful to do. And whether that's volunteer work or maybe finding a job that, you know, isn't necessarily something you have to do out of necessity, but something you enjoy doing, but some way to provide meaning and value for your life and what you're doing. I think that's really the key to retiring well and making sure that you actually don't experience some of the negative health effects.
Yeah, and I couldn't agree more based on the conversations we have with people. The people that have that purpose and, hey, what's tomorrow bringing are definitely part of that 90% that are enjoying and are happy in retirement. And the next stat is actually really interesting. 72% of retirees say that they feel younger than their actual age.
Well, it's because they're finally prioritizing their health, right?
It's that pickleball is what it is.
Pickleball.
I think that's a really cool stat, though. You know,
no, I agree.
Fun to hear that people are feeling younger than their current age. So,
yeah, for the last 5 years, I've been saying I feel older than my current age. So, I'm looking forward to when that flips in the other direction.
Well, I know we're talking about retirement. I know we're talking about planning and all these things. But I tell you what, a lot of times people, you know, y'all say when I was your age, people would say, oh, just wait till you're 40. This is going to happen. That's going to happen. You know, you're just going to start feeling, you know, not as good. Your shoulder is going to hurt for no reason. Yeah. Well, for me, that was at age 37. So 40 was a breeze.
Gotcha. Well, I'm sure at this point, listeners are dying to know how old I am. So to satisfy your curiosity, I am 35 years old. Just five years younger than our seasoned Ryan.
93% of retirees say they can do things they couldn't while they were still working. Whether that's, again, travel, watching after the grandkids, a lot of things like that. So it really opens up a ton of time, volunteer work, etc. Almost half of retirees surveyed said that they picked up a new hobby. I actually think that's really interesting. Something brand new that they hadn't done before or didn't think that it would be of an interest to them.
Yeah, it almost, you know, reminds me of like during COVID, people all of a sudden, you know, they were unexpectedly unemployed. And not to get political, but, you know, they just had more free time. They, you know, and one of the biggest things, like whether you're following on social media or just, you know, in life, you would just see people pick up new hobbies, do things that they wanted to do for years. And you know, obviously there's more to life than work. And I think that sometimes we put a lot of these things on hold until we're retired. And really, I kind of like that initial stat that we had a little earlier saying that most retirees wish they traveled more prior to retirement. I think a lot of times people realize that, hey, I wish I picked up this new hobby or I did this thing. And I would just encourage people, like whatever those bucket list items are, the things that you hope to eventually do, don't wait until retirement to do it, even though sometimes retirement is the only, it creates that opportunity because you do have more time, but pursue some of those things now, whether it's, you know, if you're married with your spouse or with your children, and really take advantage of those years prior to retirement as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Last couple of quick stats as we wrap things up, but 89% of retirees say it's important to travel in retirement. So back onto that travel talk, almost 90% say that it's important to them at that point. And then 18% of retirees say that they volunteer their time and expertise to organizations. So this is really interesting. This is probably 7 or 8 years ago for me. I was doing some work at the local high school in town where I live. And I was in their like wood shop area talking with the teacher there. And in the back of the room was he was an old guy. He was literally 100 years old, 100 years old. This was like 7 years ago. And he was there and I was talking to the teacher and I said, like, who's the gentleman in the back? And they just said, well, you know, he retired. He was a teacher here and he's been retired for 40 years. But after a few years in retirement, he just wanted to come in and start helping out the younger teachers. And he's been doing that for almost 40 years. 100-year-old guy coming into the high school every single day. Thought it was amazing. So volunteering your time, volunteering your expertise, etc. With that, Yelisei, any last words of wisdom or thoughts before we close out?
No, I think this has been a great podcast. Hopefully you found it to be valuable. We obviously, it is tax season. That was the focus of what we discussed today. We do have a team of professionals, CPAs, that work in a variety of areas where we can help you. You know, if you have a question that's related to retirement anyway, whether it's life insurance, long-term care, Medicare, tax planning, investments, we probably have an expert who can help you in any of those areas. I have yet to find a question that we haven't been able to answer with somebody on our team who's had many years of experience and knowledge in a variety of areas. So, yeah, this has been a fun time. Hopefully, as I mentioned, you've enjoyed it as much as we have.
Yeah, check out our other podcast, atfpodcast.com. If you do have additional questions, like Yelisei said, or you want to look at a potential retirement consultation, a complimentary consultation, the phone number is 612 612- 286-0580. We'd be happy to get in touch and talk through what your goals for retirement are.
Thanks for listening to All Things Financial. You deserve to work with retirement planning specialists who care about your money and take a unique approach to your financial and retirement needs. Visit allthingsfinancial.com and set an appointment today.